A lot of how I experience procrastination, it's like I feel agitated. I have this desire to move and to do things. There's energy, but it's not focused at all.
Welcome to Building Remotely. Our goal is to create the world's first guide to building a remote company, inspired by founders and leaders at remote startups. I'm Sondre, the founder and CEO of Safety Wing, the company offering global health insurance for remote teams. Let's begin. In this episode, I'm joined by Taylor Jacobson. Taylor is the founder of FocusMate, a virtual co-working application. Welcome to the podcast, Taylor.
Thank you, Sondre.
Together with Taylor, we will discuss strategies to decrease procrastination and increase productivity in a remote workspace. Taylor, FocusMate, I love the product. And we talked right before the podcast that you've had some life experience that informed and inspired the founding of FocusMate. Do you want to share, you know, what was the personal founding journey that led you to building it the way you did?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I've had a few, I'll say really challenging life experiences that have both led to and evolved how we build and how we run this company. The first was actually the first time I was working remotely in a job. And I had begged my boss to let me work remotely because my commute was so long. This was more than 10 years ago. And I started working remotely and I just couldn't do it. I basically just procrastinated my entire days away. And in pretty short order, I was not fired, but I was kind of invited to leave. And I was super ashamed and humiliated. And I did. I left that job. It was such a conspicuous failure for the first time in my life that I was really forced to confront, you know, there's something wrong here. And probably over the ensuing year was when I really started to get into just learning about productivity and all sorts of personal growth, but really just from a place of absolute stuckness on my own. I was so humiliated that I wasn't ready to go back and get another job. You know, I like really needed to center myself and find myself again and like figure out what had happened. So that really started me on this journey of understanding the human being and how we can get so massively stuck and broken down and wanting to do something about that professionally. My first stop after that was studying executive coaching and working with people one-on-one. I learned a lot through that experience as well. I've also experienced some very severe PTSD in my life. And if it's possible, that was a even much, much more severe kind of breakdown in my life that really stopped my life in its tracks. And that really took me down a path of studying the nervous system and understanding a lot more deeply physiologically what's happening when we're stressed. And we can come back to that. I think we have there's some great stuff to unpack there, but that's really also like sensitized me to the range of struggles that people can experience and helped inform not just how can we build a product that helps address people's nervous system state in a positive way to help them focus, but also how do you build a company that, you know, like I like to think of myself as somebody with assets or attributes that I can bring to the party to make the party great. And I believe that's true for everybody. And things can happen to us, to our bodies, in our lives that really make that difficult. Really make it hard to kind of show up at the party and bring something that people want or need. And so how can we build, you know, company cultures and spaces that support people to be their best and are really sensitive to the full range of struggles that human beings go through. So yeah, those two have really profoundly not just, you know, shaped FocusMate, but my life as well.
Mm. No, that's a really interesting background. And so let's get into the product for those who haven't heard about it. I came across FocusMate from I think he should be your lead ambassador, Jarl, our head of engineering, who was sort of pestering me about trying this product. And I did love it when I first heard about it. I like, you know,
productivity experimentation. So that was kind of like the bucket, you know, when I first heard about it. Oh, that's funny. Like somebody tried to do something I hadn't heard about before, you know, in that realm, which is interesting. And I tried it and it did work. Like it worked the first time for me. You know, the way I experience a product is just you show up on a screen with a stranger, you state the commitment for what you intend to do that hour. And I, you know, I said some task that I've been putting off, right? Kind of like almost like daring me to do it. And then I did do it and I was like, wow, this stuff really works. It was fun. How do people use your product? How do you describe what it is today? I mean, it's evolved a lot since I first tried it.
Yeah. So let's just give kind of the high level overview. FocusMate is a global community of people that are helping each other focus. And the core experience that is available is we pair you up with an accountability partner. And you're meeting on a video call that's either 25 minutes long or 50 minutes long. And you're each sharing some commitments about what you're going to work on or get done during that period of time. So if you and I are partners, you know, you might say, hey, I'm researching a podcast guest that I'm going to have later this afternoon and writing down some notes. And then you could ask me, what am I working on? And, you know, maybe I'm writing up an investment memo, you know, I'm writing a first draft, whatever. And so we share with each other what each of us are doing. And then really the bulk of the call, we get to work and we're keeping each other company. The video is minimized to the corner so you can still see your partner. Sometimes people will have their partner on another device, on a cell phone next to their laptop. And we're just working. And I can see you, you can see me, but we're basically just sitting there quietly. And then at the end, 25 minutes or 50 minutes, a chime will go off that, you know, calls our attention back to each other. And we just check in and we share, how did it go? Like I got a little distracted in the middle, but I got back to it. And so it's not like a harsh, punitive form of accountability. It's like, hey, let's just be honest about what just happened. And let's celebrate also a little bit, you know, whatever we just got done. It can be strangers. There are increasingly ways to curate your FocusMate experience as well, so that you're working with the people that you love to work with, that maybe are your favorite people to work with, or match the preferences that you have of how you like to work, et cetera. So yeah, that's kind of the high level overview. And a lot of people actually use these back to back, maybe like your colleague Yarla, where it kind of becomes the backbone of how they structure their day to get their day started, keep going. Mm-hmm. And then actually also to wrap up your day and just say, okay, that was my last FocusMate session. Day's over, closing the computer. I'm free.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he often mentions that he has a productivity YouTube channel. And I would say two things that my impression seems to like really changed his life was, one was FocusMate and the other was Ritalin and getting diagnosed with ADHD. And that tells you how powerful it can be. You know, it's noticeable if you do use it. As we get into focus and productivity, I recall my early journey of learning self-management. And one of my big changes was, I noticed on your blog that you announced your first integration with BeeMinder. BeeMinder was actually one of my breakthrough things years ago. BeeMinder is this thing where you can kind of threaten yourself to kind of charge money from your account if you don't, you know, hit something. And I connected it to this to-do list app. And I wish I had discovered FocusMate back then, you know, because I suspect it could have been one of those, you know, paths out of the struggle. Could you, you know, set the scene? You know, everyone knows the topic, but like, what is the topic for you? You know, procrastination and focus. What's the benefit? What is it like when you don't have it?
I think procrastination and focus, I see them as two sides of the same coin. Let's start with focus. Focus is like a real state of calm and the capacity for intentionality. You know, when we're focused, we're in a nervous system state that is sometimes called rest and digest. It's sometimes called safe and social. The important thing really is that we feel safe. And as a result, we're optimizing our body for focus and collaboration. And so our blood flow becomes optimized to the brain, to our facial muscles for like smiling at other people and communicating mm-hmm. more effectively, and to the vocal cords. And when somebody's in this state, safe and social, they'll actually emote more. You'll hear more of what's called prosody in the voice, which is like the sing-songy quality of voice when it goes up and down and it sounds really expressive. That arises from being safe and from having blood flow optimized to these places. And we can focus. In a way, I think so many of us are so used to chronic stress that when we feel really calm, it's like, oh my God, this feels so good. We're not designed for the number and types of stimuli that we have, and our bodies really react to them in the same way that they react to true danger. You know, so like having a siren go by your house, like, you know consciously that you're safe, but your body doesn't know that it's safe. And a siren is really designed to stimulate a different nervous system state, which is fight flight. And it's going to spike your cortisol. It's going to spike your adrenaline, and your blood flow is going to shift into your spinal column, your limbs, which is optimizing for something else, which is to either run away or to fight and not to focus, not to collaborate, not to be social. Even like phone notifications, you know, to kind of be trite, that whole world of like, oh, tech is distracting us. We really don't want our bodies to be attuned to these kind of inbound inputs all the time, because really what the body is asking, not the mind, it's not a mindful process. It is an automatic or autonomic process. When you get a notification, the body's like kind of excited, but that's not such a good thing. It's excited because it's like, whoa, is something terrible about to happen? And it could be something good is about to happen too. And we're attuned to both of those things, but really we're a lot more attuned to something dangerous could happen. And I better check this just in case like something terrible is about to happen. I think most of us don't have very frequent or very profound experiences of calm. I mean, maybe this is why like meditation has just skyrocketed in the last few years, and we have all these huge startups now that are like mindfulness and meditation and calm, and because we're just craving these moments, these like few and far between moments where we're just like slowing down our breath to a kind of breathing that reflects just feeling safe. Like while you're meditating, you're closing your aperture to like, I'm not going to check my phone. I'm not going to look at all these things that are going to spike my adrenaline and cortisol and have me not feel safe. That is how I think of focus and procrastination. And procrastination is like, I know that societally we have this narrative about ADHD, about procrastinators. It's like there's something wrong about us or something different about us. And the reality is people that procrastinate, people with ADHD, generally just have a patterned stress response, anxiety, all these things. They're just kind of different patterns of symptoms that we've grouped together and called, okay, this pattern of symptoms is called ADHD. This one's called anxiety. This one's just procrastination. But they're all just expressions of being chronically in a fight flight state. And then some of those things start to become just behavioral patterns and quote unquote personality. But when you have chronic stress, when you are feeling stressed out, a lot of how I experience procrastination, it's like, I feel agitated. I have this desire to move and to do things. There's energy, but it's not focused at all. So like I might go have a snack. I might go clean something up. I might like send some text messages. I might check my email. I'm not doing nothing generally. There is an exception to that, which is yet another nervous system state where we just shut everything down. So sometimes when we're procrastinating, we are totally shut down. But oftentimes we're just in this kind of low-level fight-flight state where we're agitated, we're doing things, and that's our body's expressing the desire to flee or fight. We want to move. We actually need to move when we're in that state. That's the correct, healthy response to stress, is to express that fight-flight impulse. But it is not a focused energy. It is not focus at all. So that's how I think of procrastination too. It's just like this agitated need to move and a complete lack of, like, the blood's not in your brain. You're not being intentional. You have to get to safety is kind of what your body is telling you.
That sounds, you know, like that's a great description. Either I'm in this like safe state where I'm like, you know, very high intention. I'm like, I want to do this thing. or I'm in this agitated where I'm like, oh, threats can be anywhere, like, you know, kind of jumpy, you know, where is the next threat coming from? Sort of semi scout, semi fight or flight, jumpy situation. And if that's the thing, it sounds like the solution is to make the environment feel safe. Well, actually, now that I think about it again, maybe it does work. Maybe because it's like, if you just take that logic directly, right? It's like if your body is reading potential threats in your environment, then the solution is to like remove the threats. But of course, the threats can be, they don't have to be in the room, but probably having a room which doesn't, you know, have huge tarantulas or like snakes flowing around the corner would be an improvement. Or, you know, I don't know, having your home office set up in like a really bad part of Rio or something. The threats are psychological.
Yeah, the physical environment is super impactful. And, you know, while you were talking, I thought of too, like, imagine if you're having a fight with your partner, that maybe, you know, you live with your partner and you're having a fight with your partner and they just kind of walk by or something. Mm-hmm. Your nervous system is immediately going to respond to that and be like, what's about to happen? Are they going to yell at me? Something, you know. So that's like a very vivid example of something in your physical environment that is going to set off either, and it could be the opposite too. So there's, you know, you could feel extremely safe held and taken care of by a person that is in your physical environment. And we'll come back to that too, because that's a huge part of why FocusMate works and really the most powerful nervous system trigger or stimulus is really about social interaction. I just like have to clean up. I have to have a clean workspace no matter what else is going on. If I sit down to work and my workspace isn't clean, like that's the first thing, you know? Mm-hmm, and then it's like writing my to-do list probably is the next thing. And it's like these things that send signals that like, okay, there's not chaos here. There's order. It's clean. It's predictable. Predictability, right, is a huge safety signal. I think you're totally barking up the right tree. Well, no, one of the challenges that we run into here is that our bodies aren't always only responding to what is in our current environment, like you said. So like there could be something you're ruminating on that's like a project that you have to do that, I don't know, like a board meeting or something. Maybe you have somebody on your board that just like really stresses you out. And so it's like as soon as you start thinking about the board meeting, you're not feeling safe. That person is not there. They're not about to attack you. They're not in your environment. Mm-hmm. But that project is connected to the visualized experience of not being safe. And that's probably a kind of example that a lot of people have in their lives where, we're not all out there like hunting mastodons or like trying to evade tigers or something. But we do all have social settings, whether it's professionally or, you know, personally or whatever, where there's some people in our lives that we don't feel safe around. And we're kind of forcing ourselves or being forced to interact with those people. So yeah, for you, it might be, okay, there's a important meeting coming up and it could be a week away. Mm-hmm. But when you're thinking about that, you're not feeling safe and you're going to be a lot more likely to procrastinate.
Yeah, that can feel like a threat in your environment. Sort of.
100%.
So how can you clean up? Yeah. Like what's the equivalent of cleaning up those kind of psychological triggers?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll just speak on a personal level since I've really come to understand this deeply and started to become more sensitized as I go through changes in my nervous system state. And like having that lens allows me to see a lot more clearly as opposed to like, when you're not really clear what's going on, you're just suddenly eating pizza. And it's like, okay, this is what's happening now, but you're not attuned to
how
the experience.
Like,
it's not like, oh, like there's a meeting tomorrow that I'm really stressed about and here's why I'm stressed about it. So what I want to do is just like totally squash that experience and I want to eat something. But I've really cleaned up a lot of relationships. You know, we were talking about even like making changes within your team at work. Not everyone has the capacity to change other people on their team, but you can go and find a workplace environment where hopefully every single person that you interact with, you feel really safe with that person. And so I think the overwhelmingly important thing here is like don't intellectualize it. We intellectualize a lot of things. Your body is kind of the boss as far as regulating your nervous system. The mind is really responding to the body when it comes to this. Okay, that's not 100% true. We do have patterns of thought, but for me, the most powerful has just been, I don't need to rationalize why I do or don't feel good around this person. And there's a lot of research that shows that the body is actually picking up on things that the mind isn't, and it's picking up on them a lot faster. So in a way, it's smarter of us to just listen to our intuition and how it's responding to different people, different relationships, and don't force it. Don't try to like convince yourself that it's okay. Just go be around people that feel really safe. That's probably the 80-20.
That's the 80-20, the relationships and the people, and listening to your heart or body. You know, you have this response during the day, fight or flight, and then that becomes a habit, and then that eventually becomes, and you were like, I guess, your personality. And I just found that, you know, chain funny, because, you know, I can certainly empathize with that, which is that certainly habits. Everyone knows that habits is this thing. You can get up, get going, and then they have their own momentum. And then changing them in any direction requires a lot of energy and effort. And so if the habit is good, if my habit is focus and safety, right, I can then barrel through, you know, a lot of unsafe people and situations, and I'll be like smiling through it just because I have a habit of, you know, chilling out. But if you find yourself on the other end, you know, and maybe someone listening to this, they can recognize that pattern, and maybe it isn't a healthy option. Maybe they've been at a terrible workplace for a long time, right? And they've just gotten really antsy all day, every day, every time someone asks them something at work. And I've heard people say this, and it sounds like it's the worst, to the degree where it's like they're described as such. It appears to other people as their personality. What do you do? What do you do when you got to that point where you've been in a context, or you've kind of nurtured unhealthy behavioral pattern for so long that, you know, you can't even remember what it was like to not be like that?
Yeah. And you may have never been like that. I mean, a lot of people, these things arise, you know, we're most plastic from age 0 to 7. I know for me, there is a lot of aspects of what I thought was my personality that weren't. It's physical conditioning that leads to patterns of behavior and patterns of thought that become how we relate to ourselves, how other people relate to us. And I certainly believe there's something called personality, you know, like that baby is really different from that baby. And, you know, one just wants to dance and the other, you know, wants to like build things, whatever. But there's a lot of personality that I do not think is real. I think it's body conditioning, nervous system conditioning. So honestly, I think that's probably half the battle. And this isn't just people who are like what you described, where they've been chronically in an environment that makes them feel unsafe, and now they're the sort of jumpy person or whatever. I mean, I would love for every single person listening to this to just sort of like audit their lives of anything in their life that makes them feel less than totally safe, and find a way to move the needle on those things, even one thing. So that's kind of it. It's like recognize the things in your life that don't make you feel safe and change them. You know, find ways to get rid of them, find ways to create more safety in your life. It's actually not that complicated. You know, you just have to start by letting go of the story that that's who you are. It's just how your body is responding in a really chronic way. And it's true. At some point, it doesn't take that long. The body starts to be like, okay, you're not reliable to keep us safe. So we're just going to be hypervigilant. We're just going to be like this all the time.
That's funny. You fire.
And the executive functioner that's running the show here, you really suck at this. So like we're taking over and, you know, every time a siren goes by, every time like somebody claps, you know, or a door closes and it's different triggers for different people based on what environments they've experienced that weren't safe. Every time you experience that trigger, your body is going to say, you know, what's going on? It's not that hard. It just requires shifting your lens to creating as much safety as possible. And just one more thing to call out is, you know, you talked about how sometimes you have the capacity to kind of like steamroll through stressful situations. And that's really possible too. It's really about learning how to resource ourselves. It could very well be that you've cultivated habits that, you know, you, maybe you start your day a certain way, you end your day a certain way. You're kind of, you're creating enough resources for your body that your body is like, all right, we're good. Like, we can go and hunt the mastodon and we'll be okay. And I would say, like, more safety is always better in some regard, but I'm not sure about that. There's definitely, like, healthy stress, and our bodies go through, you know, a hormone cascade where, like, cortisol rises in the morning to, like, help us get our day started and, like, go do stuff. These things aren't universally bad, but it's more of, like, where are we tolerating stressors? You know, it could just be a shitty boss that always makes you feel bad about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, just cut that out. Like, you got to get that person out of your life.
Mm. Well, to just take those, like, other ways to focus. So one is something I would call resolve. It's like on the far side of danger. And I sometimes wish I could turn this button on because it's so good. But it's like I can only turn it on when the danger is real. And then another, you know, way is, you know, adventure. Right? It's like the focus you get, maybe it's the same one of like going really fast on skis downhill. And people would describe that, like suddenly your mind just clears, right? And it's a similar thing. It's like your body is just saying like, this is serious. You know, we're going to trust this one version. You know, you got the reins. We're not going to bother you with anything. Hmm. And it was so sad after COVID subsided, and you know, all the noise came back, and I was like, boy, I missed that time. What do you think?
Well, I don't know, but as you were talking, my guess was kind of similar to yours, that they might actually be similar. And play is the experience of mixing safe and social, the kind of the top state, with fight and flight. The reason that play exists from like a physiological or evolutionary standpoint is that it's allowing us to oscillate in and out of fight, flight, and safety really fast. It's strengthening the nervous system is one way to put it. It's teaching it to function really optimally. And that's what we want, is to be able to respond really quickly to say, okay, we're not safe, and now we are safe, and now we can go back to feeling a certain way. The skiing, I resonate with that a lot too. Like, there could be a couple of things going on. One is you're like continuously expelling the fight flight energy. You're not allowing it to get pent up, which is really unhealthy. You're like really just letting it flow. It may be this sort of this mixed state of like physically expending the energy.
So play is probably a great pathway then. You have this formula in FocusMate with methods of getting out of this antsy mode to the focus mode. They're stating your intention. There's some social pressure. There's something about specificity of like the hour you have to do it. Can you maybe talk through those? How did you come up with those, and why do they work so well, you think, for traversing the gap?
Yeah, so you just mentioned three. It's almost like we keep discovering more science that validates different parts of the experience. So we can start with the one that we've spoken about ad nauseum on this conversation already, which is having another person there. And your nervous system state is going to shift immediately just connecting with that person. And there's such a strong culture of UnFocusMate of being kind, friendly, supportive, that those first moments when you're dropping in, and a lot of people will say, I want to be a good partner, so I will smile and be friendly. And that by itself, just saying, okay, I'm going to smile, and then having another person mirror that back to you, your nervous system is going to shift immediately. You're going to feel better. You're going to feel more focused. So that's one. Two, you talked about sharing your intention. A lot of science around that, and the specificity of that also helps. So we're always encouraging people to be as specific as possible. Let's say you're programming a robot to say like, robot, I want you to like sweep the floor. You don't say, hey, robot, clean the house. You're basically like, take that broom and sweep that spot. It's like very specific. And that's how I think about specificity for ourselves too, is like, if you're trying to plan your day, the more specific you can be, the more you're like programming the robot for what it's going to do, the less resistance you're going to have, because you then there's less cognitive load to figure out the missing pieces, like phone calls. Like if I need to make a phone call to my brother to talk about, you know, some plan that we're making to visit my dad, let's say, if I just write down call my brother, I won't do it because I'm looking at that thing and I don't know why I'm doing it. It's way too obtuse. But if I say like, you know, call Spencer to select dates for, you know, Florida visit, and I'm like, okay, like that's easy, I got that. If he doesn't answer, I'll leave him a voice note. Like this cascade of other just like ease kind of comes from that. So That's a big part of what we're encouraging people to do with FocusMate as well. Mm-hmm. At the end of a FocusMate session, there's this celebration. And I call it a celebration. Okay. A lot of the times it's really just acknowledging what you just did, but that's a form of celebration. It's basically like taking something that already happened and revisiting it and amplifying it and sharing it with somebody else. And when we do that, we're kind of like deepening the neural wiring of that experience. Like the brain can't distinguish between I did the thing and now I'm revisiting and celebrating that thing. And you talked about the power of habits. It's this opportunity to deepen our relationship to ourselves as capable of following through on things and people that accomplish things and people that do what they say they'll do and all these things. So actually celebrating, acknowledging progress is huge. It doesn't take a lot of time. This is like the last 60 seconds of a FocusMate session, but you're also doing that with somebody. So again, your physiology is going to shift because you're together and you're sharing that experience. And so it's going to deepen the impact of that in your wiring. So anyway, there's more, but those are a few. And yeah, you put them together and, you know, a lot of people just are like, this is magic. How is it possible that this is so impactful? But it's really just like, you know, at least a dozen different things that are all just kind of interacting with each other.
So let's move now into the topic of social groups and men's groups after that. But FocusMate is a social app. There are people there. But you clearly believe in this social pathway to focus. And that's, you know, a big part of what sets FocusMate, I think, apart. So could you maybe explain how you think about people? You know, what good are they? You know, why do we need support groups? What have you gotten out of your support groups?
Why do we need people? It's actually like not such a trivial question because my perception is that, at least in American society, we're so obsessed with individuality and independence that we've taken it to a toxic extent where we really pride ourselves on being well-rounded, being able to do things on our own, not asking for help. I think societally, culturally, we are terrible at asking for help. I can think of all the zillions of times as a founder where you have no idea what you're doing. And the smart move is to find somebody who knows how to do that thing and to ask them and to have them tell you more or less exactly what to do. And that's a pretty short path to success. And it's not always effective. You know, there's complexity that makes situations different. But I can think of so many times where I spoke to an advisor or a couple about something and it totally changed my mind about something. It totally opened how I was thinking it. But I can also look back and see the kind of anxiety I had about initiating those requests for help. And there's this kind of conversation that ensues that's like, am I taxing this relationship too much? When was the last time I asked for help? Is this too big of an ask? Will this make me look stupid if I ask this question? And I think that whole, I've only been me, but I have this sense from watching the world and American culture, certainly, that that's really normal. I might even be better at asking for help than most people. And I'm just kind of letting those fears go or managing myself through them in order to ask for help. But I think those stories that I'm telling myself, those fears are a function of a society, and that's gone off the deep end as far as not knowing how to ask for help and give help and just really prizing doing things on our own. I don't know, that's one example that really comes to mind, but I think it's also helpful to connect it to the environment in which human beings evolved as a tribal environment where you literally cannot survive without other people. not everyone is going out to hunt. Some people are staying to protect the camp, to take care of the children, to, you know, have a fire ready when the hunters come back. There's all these things that, like, you literally wouldn't survive. You know, it's like, hey, here's my baby. I'm going to go hunt. Will you keep my baby alive while I'm gone? Right? Or sleeping at night. You know, some people are going to stay awake and some people are going to sleep. And it wouldn't be safe for everyone to be asleep at the same time. Just one particularly vivid one is just like, it's super cold tonight, so we're going to spoon, you know? And not just with your partner, but like with the hunter that you're hunting with, right? And that, to me, is like incomprehensible to the modern male that you could like huddle together with another man for warmth because you're cold. It's just way too vulnerable. It's way too, I'm not tough because I'm doing this. There's all this bullshit that arises around these sort of things. But that's how we evolved. It's like we really need each other and we're much more effective at whatever we're doing when we allow ourselves to be appropriately vulnerable and ask for help when we need it. It's not affiliated with FocusMate. Yeah, just recommend it. The website is roundtablemen.com. Yeah.
Roundtablemen.com. Thank you very much. I definitely will look into both the FocusMate and the Roundtable. We are implementing many lessons we've learned from your website. By the way, I love how authentic you write on your website. It's greatly appreciated. You know, it's so unique and fun to see a company with some character. So thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Where would you direct people who want to read more about everything we've talked about today?
Well, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate the kind words. And if you're listening, we'd love to welcome you into the FocusMate community. That's focusmate.com. Me personally, I'm most active on LinkedIn. If you want to find me there, just Taylor Jacobson.
Thank you, Taylor. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
You can also get more insights from other remote leaders on buildingremotely.com. Here you'll find the first chapters of the Building Remotely book, as well as articles and events relating to remote work. See you next time.